Okay, so to start us off on this second panel, we have Louise Rice and Selim Ziri, who are both from Touch Press, who are going to speak about Touch Press and about the creative process. As Sonia mentioned, Touch Press are responsible for two of the apps that were part of the project that we carried out, the Wasteland and Shakespeare Sonics apps.
So I'm Salam, and I've been working at Touch Press for a year and a half. And we make apps that allow people to explore content in new ways, and I'd like to call them all educational. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our creative process with the Sonics and the Wasteland specifically, a little bit about our audience, and some of the things we're working on now. So, a little bit about Touch Press. We've made about 27 apps now. Covering a wide range of subjects, everything from classical music to poetry, popular science. We've got Kids Atlas that rotates, and we've got 300 skulls that spin, anything really. And we developed these apps by working with a series of different content partners, and these are some of them. So the company actually started because our creative director wrote this book, and just wasn't entirely satisfied because his vision was to make this a much more interactive experience. And although it's a beautiful coffee table book, when he found out about the iPad, a very, very small team of people got to work and developed the Elements app, which was our first ever app, which was on the iPad when it launched. And this is a picture of Steve Jobs talking about the iPad with the app in the background. So who are Touch Press apps for? We often talk about children of all ages because we basically design these apps so that they spark the curiosity of a user in the same way that children would engage with new content. And we do this by trying to deliver a very tailored experience. So we ensure that every app is really layered so you can access as much or as little as you want. And I was telling Louise, actually, I googled Shakespeare Sonics by Touch Press, and the first video that comes up is a children's tech review of the app. So it is a very wide audience. So these are the two apps that I know were part of the research project. The Wasteland, which was actually launched in 2011 and was a project that we worked on with Faber and Faber. And Shakespeare Sonnets, same partner, also with Art of Shakespeare and Illuminations, and released in 2012. Just a bit of background about where we come from. So I'll start with The Wasteland because it was the first literary app that we had done, our third app ever, and a lot of the thinking that went into that has informed kind of everything we've done since. And it's not an app about the poem, it is the poem. And during the production, the team who were working on it actually referred to it as the iPad edition of The Wasteland, because they didn't want it to be a compilation of random information about the poem or a series of different ways of looking at it, but the text is at the heart of the poem, of the app, sorry. And that's something that we feel very strongly about with all the types of content we work with, because when you're working with something as like pivotal as T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, you don't need to have gimmicks or bells or whistles or crazy animations. You want people to read the text, and that's why it is a very text-led project. I'm going to see if this video works. There's no sound because I haven't managed to sort that out yet. But there are three areas, I guess, we wanted to talk about. The UX and UI. So a lot of thought was put into how people actually see what's on the screen. Firstly, like I said, to foreground the text, but also to facilitate reading on an iPad, which can be really difficult. It's bright, there's glare, it can be tiring. And the designer, Hilary Kenner, actually talks a lot about the typeface. There was a lot of thought put into the colours. Yesterday I found out that if you look very carefully, the lines don't just flash blue, they gradually become blue. And all of that was very, very, very carefully thought about. The second thing is the engineering. So the smoothness in the scrolling. When you navigate through the poem, there's not this rush of text whizzing by like on a website. there is this like inertia, there's this gentle kind of bounce back when you reach a different section, and that's so that you can actually have a reading experience without feeling like you're looking at a screen, a disruptive screen. And the third thing is really the content. So if you think about what The Wasteland is, it's actually a series of books put together with the heart, the poem at the heart, and you can call to these different bits of content instead of having to push them aside or navigate through them. You can call to them as and when you want them. So if you want to look at the notes, if you want to write your own, you can. If you just want to watch the performance, you can. And this required a range of expertise. Not everybody was into poetry who worked on the app. It's like Shakespeare sonnets. Very similar format. We applied kind of the same approach to this. The key difference is that the performances are kind of almost equally as important as the text itself. And it is again designed to give people as much or as little background and extra content as they want or need. So this is a way of navigating through the sonnets by looking at all the different actors who perform them. And you can also see another feature that we had that wasn't in The Wasteland is that you can favourite certain sonnets, which is really useful. There's 154, and some people just watch David Tennant's one over and over again. Yeah. And all these performances were recorded specifically for the app, and it was by far not the biggest cost. All these actors were very eager to do it and didn't do it for necessarily a lot of money, which always surprises people. Warhorse was an app that is a different app. It's a children's novel by Michael Morpurgo. We worked on it with Egmont, and Louise actually produced the app, and it's got very, very similar features. And one of the things that was kind of developed in The Wasteland were these notes that can synchronise with the different parts of text as you tap on each line. And Warhorse has this incredibly rich timeline, which is how we brought that kind of educational dimension to the novel. And the beautiful thing is, actually, as you read the novel, you can have the timeline in the margin, and it will link to the relevant information as you read the story. Although, again, it's designed for children, but it is for everyone. So one of the questions that I was asked was, how much do we think about higher education and academics? And the truth is, not much. Like I said, we try to layer these apps so that there's a level of quite complex content, and there's a level of quite easy, digestible content. So it's designed so that a complete novice will enjoy it and get something out of it, but it would also stand up against, you know, the critique of an academic or an expert. And we also, a core part of our brand, I guess, is that we want people to feel that educational content is not just for school, it's not just for studying or passing an exam. We want people to have the experience of learning things as a hobby. So by designing these apps where it's fun to read all the Shakespeare sonnets, for kids, that's kind of our key audience. Kind of, we avoid that education with a big E. So what are we doing now? It's interesting because our thinking has moved on quite a lot from The Wasteland and the sonnets. And 4 years doesn't sound like a lot of time, but in tech, it's practically 40 years. And a lot of differences between the iPad user of then and the iPad user or the iPhone user of today. So we're trying to kind of curate what we do according to the expectations of the new audiences. So this is also a video. Although I just said we don't focus on education with a big E, we have just launched an app with the Juilliard School, who are based in New York, and they're a very famous, prestigious arts academy. And I don't have any sound, sorry. But it's essentially a look into the production process and the creative process that goes into the teaching and into the performances, and it uses a lot of the different capabilities of the device, but it's actually designed for people who love the arts, not just for students, definitely not just for teachers. And this is an interesting way of showing how our thinking has kind of evolved, because this is our first subscription app, and although this content could be presented in loads of different ways, we did it as a series of episodes. So you get an episode, there are little chapters, some of it is text, some of it is interactive video, And we also thought about the iPhone first, whereas before we designed a lot of apps solely for the iPad. Our thinking has changed in that way. This is another one of our recent apps. It was released in December, and it's a series of seven key decisions by Churchill, and we developed it with Hodder and Stoughton. So when Boris Johnson released his Churchill Factor book, they came to Touch Press and said, we want an app, but we don't want an app of the book. And this is what we came up with. So you can explore these seven different sections, read different contextual bits of information from the Churchill archives, and then make a decision yourself as the user. Say why you made that decision, and then your leadership qualities are mapped on a radar diagram. And then you can see the difference between your style of leadership and Churchill's. And that was all done based on, you know, real research, and the radar diagrams were based on research done by psychologists, and we partnered with the Churchill Archive. So there's still that big educational non-fiction dynamic there, but it's designed for people to be able to kind of almost play. So we do believe that the app is a distinct medium, and we don't want to design anything that isn't an app. We don't want to just put a book in an app, or something that could have well been a website or a video or a documentary. We only want to make apps. And our latest, or one of our current projects actually, is Arcadia, which is a novel by Ian Pears. Sorry, I don't have any artwork for it, but it's on Louise's iPad.
I'll send it around.
Yeah, she'll pass it around.
It's beaten.
Yeah, so there might be little issues with it. So this novel was written as an app and not as a book. It's an interactive novel where you can switch between different universes. So as you're reading, you can kind of swipe right and read that character's life, but in a completely different universe. I can't pretend like I've read it all. So, however, this book is going to come out after the app. So it will exist as a print book, but it's written for as an app, and it's coming out in app first.
And the thing to say about the book, it would be a very interesting study, because he wrote it very specifically as an app, Ian Pears, P-E-A-R-S. And he then, the book is a curated version of the app content. So because in the app you have a choice of journeys, in the printed book he's chosen a journey. So the book there's much less content in the book than in the app. So it's a very interesting experiment by Faber. So we're going to be really curious to see how it does.
We also did the Solar System app with Faber, which was an app first and then became a big, beautiful coffee table book. So that kind of back and forth between app and book, it's not necessarily always one way. So I guess the main ways our thinking has changed, we think iPhone first because people engage with their iPhones more, their smartphones more. We think more about a global audience because that's the nature of the App Store. A lot of our audience is now based in China, the US. It's always really been based a lot in the US. And we know that as of 2014, mobile app engagement, the time people spend using apps is very, very, very little. People can spend, I think, over a third is under a minute. And we know people spend a lot more time in our apps, but what we need to do is facilitate that dip in, dip out habit that people have developed, and make sure that while we still have immersive products, we're allowing them that flexibility that they're used to with their devices. Also, our apps were really, really big, sometimes over a gigabyte in size, which can really take up space on your device. So we're trying to kind of streamline them and make sure they're kind of segmented, so you can download different bits and not have that kind of stress. Another question I was asked was about marketing the apps. A lot has changed again. The App Store is much more crowded. When the Elements came out, there were, 500 apps on the iPad App Store, something like that. And now we're concentrating a lot more efforts on marketing. Before, we do have a very strong relationship with Apple, but it does depend on the quality of your work. They don't really play favourites. So it's something that we actually have to work quite hard on, and we realise that outside the app, marketing is a really crucial element. And the people, you can't just build beautiful things and people will come anymore. And I'm just going to close on this image. This is Liam, age 6, and he's listening to Boris Johnson's narration as he makes a decision about Churchill's future. and this is kind of to the point about our audience, and his 4-year-old brother actually prefers using Seamus Heaney's 5 Fables. So they are apps for everyone. Yeah. But that's all. Does anyone have any questions or anything that I can answer?
Have we got any questions for?
I don't think typically you design much for Android devices, do you? I was just wondering if that's more about the sort of limitations of Android technology, or is it more about the kinds of people who use Androids and their willingness to purchase premium apps?
So it's a good question, and we have yet to develop anything for Android, and it's a combination of those two things. So not only is it, there are a lot more devices, a lot more screen sizes, a much wider range of capabilities in terms of what each device can run. So it becomes a big hassle, especially when you want to have a really good experience. It becomes a very big job to control it on all these different devices. Also, we know that Android users don't buy apps the way that iOS users do. So as a business decision, it makes more sense for us. And iOS development is kind of our expertise. However, we are developing new stuff for Android. As the market kind of grows, depending on the app we're working on. I hope that answers.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, so you spoke sort of about how you don't target, specifically at academics. I wonder why that is. Is it just too much of a niche market? Because you mentioned there China, and with the growth in HE in China and in East Asia, I would have thought there was the opportunity to put those two things together and actually pursue that market quite aggressively.
I think that one of the reasons we've avoided formal education is because there are certain constraints in terms of what people want out of a lesson. I think that we've avoided that because there are kind of curriculum points that people want to hit. And for us, it's all about giving people a great experience exploring the content. And they should be able to spend hours in it or minutes in it, and it's kind of, we want it to be kind of a personal journey. Not to say that we're not, happy when people use our apps in universities, but it's just not a core focus for us.
And I wonder, just sort of vaguely linked to that, we talked about partners. How does it work at TouchPress? Is it always the case that prospective partners approach you about projects? And how do you decide which partners to go with, which not to go with, or doesn't it really kind of work?
So the answer is that it used to be that they came to us, and now we're more strategic about it because we have ideas about what we want to develop and so on. So it's evolved over time.
Yes, Colette, you said the app is a distinct medium, which I really like. I have to explore that one. But isn't there a tension between the two kinds of app that your company has developed? The more text-based one, which is probably the one that does slot easier into, more easily into formal education, because as you said, it is the book, just with lots of wonderful interviews and things around it. Or perhaps the essential feature of the sort of technology, which is the interactive potential. Aren't those two slightly different things?
They are quite different things, but it's been more of a linear journey,
right,
in that sense. And our kind of new approach is to look at content and develop apps that are, you've got the content at the heart, you've got a tool that people can use, something they can actually achieve by using the app, and then you've got that social element as well that people can share and develop a community. So those are kind of the three sweet spots that we try to hit now when we approach a new project, and that's, like I said, it's kind of a reflection of how people now use their devices, and how people use their iPads.
Another question. I was intrigued by the two most recent examples that you mentioned, referred to, both Arcadia and the Juilliard Academy app. What was behind your decision to go with the subscription? I was just thinking about that in the context of one of the other apps that we looked at as part of the project was the Explore Shakespeare app, which I think was co-developed by Agant, who have now completely...
Agant.
Agant,
Gantt, who have now completely scaled back check out the website, and basically suggest that it wasn't a viable business model. So is it the case that the sort of approach, the business model for something like Wasteland is no longer viable? Is it not that clear cut?
So the issue with the business model is, yes, again, couldn't build great apps and couldn't make it work, and in fact the guy who founded it is now working for Apple. But so it is hard to the app store is so crowded that to rely purely on app sales is a hard business. It's a tough business, and so we will be, but we're not yet profitable. And the subscription model was really in conversation with Juilliard, because what you get with Juilliard is there's so much content we're filming all the time. So what we're delivering to the subscriber is 2 or 3 new episodes a month. So that's why it's a subscription model.
So it made sense in terms of the way that Juilliard works.
Yeah.
And also, just having a very brief look at the Arcadias in there, it reminded me of the sort of work that Incor branching narratives and things of that nature. Were you consciously influenced by that? Was that just something that came from the author?
I think we knew about Inkle, but that's not what influenced us. It was very close collaboration with the author and with Faber about what Ian wanted to achieve.
It's kind of like, what's the best way to deliver this vision?
Yeah, absolutely. And that took a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, it's slightly reminiscent of things like Leaves of Grass, that kind of came about. The way that narrative is delivered.
Yeah, but I think he's very clearly, I mean, he had an incredible diagram, so he had all these bits of content and he had all the journeys mapped out in a database, and you know, we had to kind of suck the stuff in and then you rewrote stuff and so on. So he had a very clear, so it's not like you can choose your path through, but he has a clear route through the narrative, the narratives, sorry.
Interesting.
Okay, well, we might ask you a few more over lunch. Thank you very much indeed.